I'm Levi Weinhagen, and this is the Fast Forward podcast produced by the Minnesota Council on Foundations. In this episode, I have a conversation with MCF's president, Trista Harris, about a recent training she had at the Institute for the Future. She shares some of the things that she learned, talks about her point of view on futurism and looking towards the future of philanthropy, and shares some other wonderful ideas as well. Here is my conversation with Trista. So I'm speaking today with Trista Harris. Hi, Trista.
Hey, Levi. Happy to be here.
And you were recently at a conference held by the Institute for the Future.
Yep.
And I was hoping you would just talk a little bit about why you went to the conference and then what you took away from that experience.
Yeah. So for the last few years, I've been studying futurism and how to use it to solve social problems, and got this email announcement about a conference that was about philanthropy and futurism, and didn't realize that there was any place that was intersecting those two things together. Institute for the Future does a lot of trainings about what's coming next, often about things like education or food or government. But this is the first time they've held a convening that's about philanthropy and futurism.
And were there things that surprised you that came up at the conference, even though you've been pretty embedded and aware of the futurism as a movement and as an idea?
Yeah, I think that the Institute for the Future has done a really great job of putting a clear box around some of the different trends that I think many people that work in philanthropy have been feeling. But they just feel it as sort of anxiousness and things being different. And Institute for the Future has this wonderful two-curve model that talks about the first curve is traditional philanthropy, and it's the way things have happened since Andrew Carnegie. It's top-down governance. It's usually a really slow process, supporting one grantee at a time. Just the sort of traditional way that we've been doing philanthropy for a really long time. The second curve is about what's coming next for the field, and that's about transparency. It's about transformational change instead of transactional change, much more flexible evaluation, and not understanding exactly how things are going to look when you start, but figuring that out as you go along. And I think those two curves intersecting with each other is what's making everybody so crabby in the field. It's sort of the old and new is running right into each other right now.
With something like that, that documentation of this is an older model and this is a sort of newer way of doing things and here's where they're intersecting. Do you feel like that is presented as more how things should be done, or just an observation of what's just happens, what's happening, as more than it is sort of a prescriptive idea?
Yeah. I think it's just what's happening. The part that I really appreciated about their model compared to some others that I've seen, this first wave of philanthropy, there's things that we're going to keep in the future that make a lot of sense. So relationships with community members and smart foundation staff that understand what's happening in the community, donor intent, those are all things that are really important right now, but will continue to remain important in the future. And then there's new things that are coming up that'll be different that we just don't have a lot of control about. So transparency is going to happen whether philanthropy is ready for it or not. The IRS is going to make 990s fully searchable very soon. Who knows what very soon means, because they've been saying that for a number of years. But at some point, there'll be big data that's tied to the sort of grant making that foundations are doing and the way that we do our work. So transparency is going to happen either way. And if we know that that change is coming, we can prepare for it before it happens.
You mentioned the fact that people get crabby at this intersection of old and new, and there's a lot of unknowns. Seems like that's one source. But I'm curious for you, what are some elements that you think are pretty easy for people to just get excited about and that are not sources of stress, but just opportunity?
Yeah, I think that foundation staff are not super excited about many of the ways that we do philanthropy, and it feels very disconnected from community wants, community needs, and what's actually happening in the ground. And I think as a field, we've been very backwards facing for a long time. So we get a grant application, it sits on our desk for a month or two, and 3 months we'll make a decision about it. We look at a grant report from last year to figure out what we're going to do next year, and then we look at six-year-old census data to see if it all makes sense. And foundation staff don't feel comfortable with that model, and it feels like the future is always a surprise rather than something that we're creating with the work that we're doing every day. So I think the exciting thing about the field starting to talk more about what's happening in the future is we can actually build to that instead of waiting for it to happen. There's decisions that we're making every single day that are creating the future.
Are there things you can take from this conference that speak to both short-term and long-term planning?
Yeah.
It seems like with
some unknown changes and some big now changes and some big potential future changes, it can be challenging to think about how do I react dynamically now, but also prepare for 5, 10, 50 years.
I think for me, one of the most surprising things about the staff at the Institute for the Future, they do a 10-year forecast, but they do it every single year. So every year they're going through a new process to see what it's going to look like 10 years from now. And I think this idea of the future being something that's dynamic and moving really falls flat when you talk about how foundations often plan their work. Like, here's our 5-year strategic plan and things will be exactly the same and we'll continue to move forward in this way and we'll meet these outcomes in the first year and the third year it'll look this way. And then the economy fully changes or community needs fully change and suddenly your plan doesn't work anymore. And so this idea of creating more flexible plans and more flexible tools so that you're looking at a long-term strategy and you understand that the work that we do as foundation leaders takes a really long time to implement. So you have to have your eye on that long-term point in the horizon. But in the short term, you have to constantly make adjustments based on current conditions to get to that place.
Are there specific programs that you see impacted by these changes or that are giving the information that we're seeing these changes? Can you think of specific programs, whether they're in Minnesota or somewhere else nationally, that are good examples of that the change in philanthropy?
Yeah, I think GiveMN is a great example of a huge future trend in philanthropy where individual donors, those dollars will be aggregated together and turn into something much larger than they would be individually. And that happens in a way that's much more transparent than traditional giving, especially in Give to the Max Day. So you've got a leaderboard and you can tell who's raising the most money. People are sharing on social media who they've supported and what organizations they're really excited about. It creates this culture of giving and excitement around giving that doesn't happen when you're sitting at home and writing a check on your own. And so I think they're a great picture of what the future of philanthropy is going to look like.
I think the talking about futurism and talking about a lot of the things that seem to be on your mind regularly mm-hmm. can feel abstract or amorphous or yeah. difficult to communicate with people both who are working in the philanthropic sector mm-hmm. and then specifically people who are not.
Yeah.
Do you have ideas of like good resources to use sort of plain speaking language about these kinds of topics?
Yeah, I think there's an idea of signals of the future. And it for each person and in each field, it's very different. And it's just paying attention to things that you hear people talk about or that you see in the media and just taking a note of it. So one of my favorite examples that I've recently seen was, I think, a 95-year-old woman who wanted to see what the future looked like, and they took her to, there's an organization that provides end-of-life gifts to seniors to help them do something exciting that they haven't been able to do in their lifetime. And so she wanted to see the future. They took her to Google headquarters, and she got to see a self-driving car in action. She got to put on the virtual reality glasses. She got to see some of the flexible glass that they're thinking about using and are using on some cell phones now. And the piece that really brought up for me is that the future isn't just a young person's game. It's something that is for all of us. And in the 1960s, the United States was really excited about the future. And we had the space program and everybody wanted to be an astronaut and we had the Jetsons on TV. And we've now moved to a place as a society where people are scared about the future. We've got Hunger Games and The Matrix and Terminator and those sorts of things where the future is something to be feared rather than something to, you know, prepare for. When kids wanted to be astronauts, they'd, you know, study science and practice holding their breath. And so I think that there's lots of different ways where we can change this idea of what's happening in the future, what it means for us regardless of our age.
So it sounds like a little bit you're saying we get to decide what our views are of what's coming forward
yep.
and sort of push for those things that we're yep. already excited about.
Yep, you're creating it. So I think as a society, the hoverboard's a great example of that. So when the Back to the Future anniversary came and everybody decided to get very frustrated that we didn't have a hoverboard yet and promises were made and where is my hoverboard?
It was frustrating.
Yes, it was because I thought we were going to have that by now. And no, of course not. And so companies were like, well, let's figure it. It seems like there's a lot of people that are interested. And now they have these weird things that kids balance on. I think they're lighting on fire a little bit more than they should.
Yeah, the batteries are melting.
You know, details. But in general, it's a way to build excitement. And then the marketplace responds to that. We don't do enough of that in the nonprofit sector and say, what would it look like if we solved education gaps? What would the field look like? What sort of organizations would we need? What sort of work would they be doing then if we've actually accomplished that goal? And then moving back from that and saying, well, what would I have to do differently today to actually get to that result? I think we get very stuck in the present and have a hard time figuring out even what success would look like.
So maybe the big question philanthropy is asking is, what is our hoverboard?
Yep, very much so. That feels like a t-shirt.
What is my hoverboard?
What's my hoverboard, yeah.
Excellent. Do you have other websites or other places people can go to find out about the Institute for the Future or futurism more broadly? Where would people go to look into that?
So Institute for the Future has a wonderful website. Singularity University is another great resource. They do a lot of compiling of news articles about the future and also do some training programs. So I think just looking into Googling the future of whatever issue you're concerned about, there's somebody that's thinking about it, and making the time and space in your schedule to start thinking about what's happening next, 5% of your time, 2% of your time, just a little bit of time each week to pay attention to what's happening and to think about what it means for your organization will make all the difference in the world.
Well, thank you for giving us this percentage of your time.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Levi. I appreciate it.
Fast Forward is produced by the Minnesota Council on Foundations. For more about our programs, go to mcf.org.